listening to Trending with Timory, offering an eternal perspective on today's hottest topics. National speaker Timory Millington has been a passionate advocate for life as long as she can remember, helping Gen X through Z answer the call to true feminism and authentic manhood. Timory holds a master's degree in biblical theology, and she covers this week's hottest stories from a Catholic worldview. You're listening to Trending with Timory.
So good to be with all of you. I have in studio with me today, Father Tim Grumbach.
It's so good to be back.
So wonderful to have you. I feel like you've been away for a while, but you've had a lot going on. What's new in the world of Father Tim?
Well, it's still going with Exodus 90. Today is 65, I believe, day 65 of 90. And so I've been off of social media and away from most of the internet. I've been keeping up with some Catholic news here and there. But other than that, just blissfully unaware of many things that are happening in the world. Although as a preacher and a teacher, I can't stay away from everything. So I've been reading newspapers.
Wow.
Yeah, they still exist. You know, the best part is that it's the LA Times that we get at the parish.
Oh.
Yeah, I know. And the best thing is it's our bishop that gets the LA Times. And the LA Times is not the biggest fan of Los Angeles bishops. Oh. And so there's a little bit of irony there that he appreciates. And so it's good to have some news that I'm not swiping or clicking or anything like that.
So. It's so nice sometimes to be detached from the world of our technology. I was just talking to someone and they were angry and frustrated. It was because they were on their computer all day and then they had to transition to catching up with personal things on their phone. And sometimes we forget that there are alternative ways of communicating face to face, maybe even calling on a phone rather than staring at a screen.
What I found most helpful too is to not have that whole world kind of in my pocket. Mm-hmm. I'm stressing out about all these relationships I have over social media. Many of them are good, but to know that that's not just waiting for me at any moment, that I have to take care of that right away and it's just in my pocket hiding away, that if I want the news, I have to go somewhere else to get it.
Yeah, absolutely. So we're going to be talking a little bit later about, no doubt, Gwen Stefani's delaying her marriage. Why is that? And it's actually relevant to all of us in our own Catholic journey. So stay tuned. You don't want to miss that. We'll also be talking about Motley Crue and their new biopic that has really, I would say, been ruffling some feathers or unjustly been entertaining people on Netflix, which will lead to a conversation of what is effeminacy and how do you rediscover a sense of perseverance in the midst of the effeminacy that we're really seeing the decline in men. And we talked about a couple weeks ago with Dr. Philip Chavez, even the biological, physical degeneration of men, I mean people in general, but also men, is something that's very serious in our culture. And finally, why are young men opting out of marriage? You'll hear that and much more. My guest, Father Tim Grumbach, is the associate pastor of St. Augustine Parish in Los Angeles. You are in the playground in many ways of the stars there in LA. We are in the middle of Lent. And one thing I have to throw out there, Father Tim, it's been really interesting. I asked this question. I would love to hear your thoughts. Why do so many people go to Mass on the National Day of Catholic Awareness? Ash Wednesday, right?
Oh, right.
Why do so many people go? Because I got some interesting responses. I would love to hear like your key takeaway, why you think that is.
There are some differences in culture as well. It's kind of an expectation. We can say, especially in the Hispanic culture, I've noticed, which, you know, is a number of different cultures, especially in our parish. We don't have just Mexicans, but we have, you know, Salvadorians and Guatemalans and people from Nicaragua. And so it's not just this one big culture, but it's a lot of cultures coming together. But there seems to be a cultural expectation that that's almost the most important day of the church year. And so a lot of people will come expecting to get their ashes, but they don't want to stay for communion.
Yeah, they leave.
Yeah. And so the rubrics will actually place the receiving of ashes right at the right after the homily, during the Mass. But for pastoral reasons, we've decided to put the reception of ashes after communion because we want to make...
Oh, interesting. Move that.
Yeah, we want to make communion the center of the Mass. Go figure. Mm-hmm. And but we've heard of some parishes that will go nameless, even in Los Angeles, that will do something of a sort of a drive-through ashes where people don't even need to come for a service. They want their ashes and they're busy so they can come and get their ashes without even having to get out of their cars.
Or the version where you press your foreheads against each other and kind of shake a little bit, hoping the cross is still tangible as the cross there.
So there's sometimes a superstition that if you don't get your ashes this year, you'll die before Ash Wednesday next year. That's maybe a gross exaggeration of that superstition. But it's out there that you have to get your ashes or something bad's going to happen to you this year.
Interesting. So a little superstitious in some cultures, possibly. Two things that really stood out to me. Holly messaged me, who heard the show a couple weeks ago. I said, why do so many people go to receive ashes? Why does every Catholic show up, or even non-Catholics? And she said that her take is that people get to go because they want free stuff. Mm. So both Ash Wednesday and Palm Sunday, which is also very popular for a lot of people, they get something. They get to take it home. So that was one person's take. Another take, which was I really thought profound as well, was that James, who's a regular listener of the show, said that it makes people feel like they belong. Mm-hmm. And I thought that was really powerful, just the longing to participate in something. Maybe some people who can't receive communion. Unfortunately, there are a lot of people who are receiving communion shouldn't be, but for those who respect and recognize I'm not in a state of grace, I've not gone to confession this last year, I can at least receive this, and I belong to my Catholic faith.
And that's a beautiful take on the ashes, especially since, you know, some people will try to say, didn't Jesus tell you not to get your face dirty while you're fasting? Don't show off. And like, that wasn't really what he was getting at. He was saying, don't fast to get attention. Mm. But you know, these days, you know, the inevitable question when you're out shopping or whatever, after you've gotten your ashes, somebody will say, oh, you've got a little, you know, dirt on your forehead. And we almost expect people to understand what Ash Wednesday is. But I think there's a wider part of the culture right now that doesn't even understand anymore.
You know what's interesting? When I was younger, I used to always get people, oh, you've got a little dirt on your forehead. This year, not at all. And I was always ready for it because it annoys me. Like, no, it's not dirt. I didn't get that this year. Most people are like, oh, yeah, it's Ash Wednesday. I find a lot of people do know because they've known someone, or so many people, especially in California, grew up Catholic. Well, I want to talk about the Motley Crue biopic that's on Netflix. Not something that you and I would necessarily watch, but in reading some of the commentary that you actually sent over, so Motley Crue came out, they were kind of going out of style, more so, maybe the forgotten rock band of many years ago. Then they wrote this book that was released back in 2001, and it's titled The Dirt, Confessions of the World's Most Notorious Rock Band. And it's just disgusting because in many ways you see how they really live this world of fame. One way to bluntly put it, and I've seen it in some articles, on the backs of women.
Right. I never thought Motley Crue was that good anyways. I'm more of a Metallica and Megadeth, Exodus sort of fan. And as far as the quality of the music goes, Motley Crue was really not all that good. But they knew how to write these kind of poppy, hard rock songs, and they had an image. And they had an image, and they were able to take advantage of that, like you said, not just on the backs, but literally on the bodies of women. Mm-hmm. And really a disgusting thing to look back at. And in some way to glorify it now on Netflix is trying to ride the wave of this, you know, washed up band who is, you know, still a lot more popular than this article seems to make them out to be.
Yeah.
They're still rather popular, especially compared to a lot of the bands that came out of that era. But it was a culture in Hollywood, very much a Los Angeles thing, that people were flocking from the rest of the country, from the rest of the world, to be a part of this Hollywood rock, metal, glam rock scene, you know, which is short for, you know, glamour. And so the metal scene became less about kind of fighting this establishment through just the heaviness of the music, as much as just, we're just going to look different and we're going to bend the envelope. We're going to break things, and we're going to break the cultural expectations of men. And so they were able to, on the surface, to look different, but to still live that, you know, misogynistic, you know, sexual lifestyle that so many people were coming to Hollywood to experience.
You know, it's really interesting just looking at their whole marketing campaign, even looking, you know, there's a reason I don't watch music videos. And I was reminded of that when I pulled up their song, Girls, 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 that so many people know.
I'm sorry.
Oh, gosh. I've got to turn this off about 12 seconds in, if not sooner. Mm-hmm. This is awful. But you look at it, and this is the gory detail that they share about just total sexual promiscuity, laughing at the party attitude of how they treated women and truly just really lowered and reduced women to sexual objects. And this is much of the complaint of what contraception, hormonal contraception, brought into the world and allowed. We made it so that there could be sexual intimacy with no consequences. And so for some, they say, well, that's what allowed us to enter into the workforce. But for others, that's what allowed for a promiscuous lifestyle of men to no longer have a sense of responsibility.
Right. And one of the most infamous scenes in that book, which I don't think it made it into the movie. Thankfully, being on my movie fast, I haven't watched any Netflix. I did watch one movie, I must admit. I got permission from my fraternity of guys.
What movie was it?
Captain Marvel. I have to keep up with my Marvel stuff. So it's the only movie that I'll be watching during these 90 days. But so thankfully, I haven't had even the temptation to check this out, even for research sake, because I hear that it's quite explicit. And it really doesn't pull very many punches. But my understanding is they did leave this one scene that was in the book out of the movie, in which the band members took advantage of a woman together who was impaired by some kind of drugs or alcohol. And so it really was a rape scene that they even today will say, oh, well, we don't remember that. We were so out of it. We don't know where that story came from. And they just throw away responsibility and could say, oh, that maybe that was in the past. We were different back then. Or even if I don't even think they make that excuse. But they say, oh, we don't remember that. And so it's this, total lack of responsibility. And to look at the way that scene grew up in Hollywood, it was this throwing away of responsibility and this trying to be men as they thought culturally men should be and taking advantage of women. And so really denigrating the women, but themselves as men as well.
That's Father Tim Grumbach. You're listening to Trending with Timory. Timory here. You know, it's interesting looking at the coming out of this biopic, looking at the band and everything that they were doing with Motley Crue in those days, and how really this is the opposite of what so much of feminism in many ways is trying to say, well, men, degrade women. Yet at the same time, women are okay with some of this degradation on a sexual level. And that's what's so interesting. This was allowed to take place. And so this is why I think in many ways Netflix is saying, oh, yeah, let's make this movie. It's entertainment. Yet some people are saying, don't you know that Netflix has very strong female leads in a lot of their stories? So it just points to so many of the inconsistencies of attitude about women.
Right. And speaking of inconsistencies, it's hard to put the reason on why they've created this movie and why they're putting it out there. Because they kind of backtracked a lot, like, we're not trying to glorify that lifestyle. We're just trying to show how it was back in the day. And I'm like,
so let's create entertainment and watch it happen.
Right, right, right. Let's get some of the biggest name actors and other music stars to be a part of this right now and to show it explicitly, knowing just why people watch these movies, why men will watch certain movies on Netflix if they're caught up in the pornographic culture and it's really unfortunate that they're taking advantage, not just of women, in the actual creation of these shows.
Yes,
These are women that they've casted and that they have filmed for these roles. And you can't hide behind, this is just the art of the past. This is just a recreation of what happened in the past. This is the actual use and abuse of the images of these women who, at times will try to say, oh, this makes me freer. And we just as Christians, as human beings, need to be able to say that and says, you may feel freer from this, but you're not.
What breaks my heart is that we use this as entertainment and it challenges each of us. I hear so many Catholics making excuses. Well, I'm just watching a movie. Well, yeah, there was that scene or yeah, that's part of the story. No, like we're using this as entertainment. There are people, like you said, acting in these scenes. But what's interesting is that at the end of the day, the spicy, sexual, scandalous content, it sells. And how are we participating in it? But what we see is what's selling is Motley Crue and the lifestyle that they lived. And although people may say, well, that's just what's done then, people imitate this. And what we see is that from Motley Crue, think about that generation. It's come a generation of men where they say, okay, we're going to test stereotypes. We're the same men who say we can't say that women shouldn't do this, women shouldn't do that. They're very pro-feminist in a way that's pro-abortion, pro-contraception. It's led to this deep sense of effeminacy in our culture.
Right. And when we speak of effeminacy, are we talking about just men becoming like women?
In part, we can say yes, or not only men becoming like women, but men giving up on what it is to be men.
Yeah. And we were talking about this yesterday. I think an important point to that, too, is it's a distortion of the feminine. Mm-hmm. Every human being has certain elements of the masculine and the feminine within them. We as Christians have a very clear view of this as church. As church, we use the pronoun, she, her, because we speak of the church as a mother, but most of all because she has a certain receptivity to her. And it seems that this effeminacy that is unhealthy for men, not just appreciating this feminine aspect of being able to receive love, to nourish it and to bear it out into the world, which men and women all experience and express in different ways. But this effeminacy that we're speaking about is not just girly men, but it's men who are distorting the feminine.
Men who are distorting the feminine, I would totally agree. But I think men who are just giving up on being men, you know, so many, we're going to be talking later on, stay tuned, about how men are giving up on marriage. And I think it's so interesting. But I think part of the problem is that so many men are strictly centered around pleasure. Mm-hmm. And so therefore, they pursue only what is pleasurable, and they run away from anything that is challenging. But, you know, when we read, you can look at St. Thomas, for example, and he talks about perseverance and how effeminacy is the opposite of perseverance. It's the opposite of pursuing what is strenuous and difficult.
Right. A passivity. Right? I see that as a distortion of receptivity, where men are called to a certain receptivity, especially in the spiritual life as well. And that's why we can almost speak of our spiritual life in the feminine. And so passivity, you know, some people will think of receptivity as just passivity. I'm just going to sit back and let things happen to me. But that's not really what receptivity is.
So for those who are kind of just joining us and they're like, okay, what are they talking about? Passivity, receptivity. So a lot of what the church talks about, how women by their very core, in their nature, are receptive human beings. Now we could point to this on a very simple biological level, you know, going kind of back to theology of the body and the physical body, the recognition of the male and female body being made for each other and the female body receives the male body, right? At the same time, it's part of what makes us so receptive as women to religion. You know, women have a better propensity toward religion, to recognizing even on a physical level, we are not as strong physically as men are. The testosterone's not pumping through our veins in a natural way that it is in men. And so because of that, there's much that we are reliable on other people for. But receptivity is not passive, as you said. There's activity. We have to consent to that reception.
Yeah. And one of the most painful things for me to see in men is a certain passivity, which isn't just a sitting back and being lazy, but at times it is choosing to do something other than what we're called to avoid doing what we're called to.
Well, and ultimately, perseverance is to pursue what is toilsome. And so pleasure is the opposite of that. Well, there isn't enough pleasure in what is good here, so I'm going to go in the opposite direction. I'm going to have sex outside of marriage because there's more pleasure there, even though what is more toilsome and what is more good. And I think most people know it's better to wait till marriage to have sex and start a family, you know, all consequences considered and long-term commitment.
Yeah, and I think one of the major parts of a good definition of sin is choosing that which is easier rather than the harder ways of God, of love that God calls us to. I've been thinking a lot about some of the young men in our confirmation class at my parish. Confirmation these days, especially a challenge, you know, just to speak the gospel into the lives of our young people. But we've got one young man who's, we were playing a game. This is so simple. It was a game where you stand up and you run around if it's called out that, you know, you know, say I'm wearing red shoes. I'm like, I love people who wear red shoes. Okay, good. Now you run up to another chair. Well, I saw this young man take his shoes off.
Because he didn't want to run?
Because he didn't want to run around. Mm-hmm. And so I, you know, God,
he didn't want to participate in the game.
Yeah, God bless that young man. I'm praying for him every day. And, you know, maybe he'll be my bishop one day, you know? but at that moment, I was thinking, this is the male passivity that our young people are tempted with
to find
an easy way out of just the even some of the things that aren't that hard to do.
But isn't that the truth? And I think so. Even parents make justifications for this anymore. Like, okay, this is what needs to be done. This is how to do it. Well, how can I do it? Not in the easiest way, but how can I kind of get around doing this, but still kind of get the accolade for having completed it? I mean, isn't this what we saw in many ways in the college scandal? I can say my child goes to this university, USC, UCLA, whatever, Stanford, whatever it might be, but let's get around. Let's bend the rules to make that happen. We've got a lot of rule benders because we want to be comfortable. And that gets to another one of the issues of effeminacy, is that we're lacking perseverance. So people are becoming soft in terms of attitude, but physically soft. And we're not physically strong, specifically men, as we used to be.
Yeah. And that's a turning away from the gospel, isn't it? The gospel requires a tremendous amount of perseverance. Over and over again, Jesus is calling his disciples to carry their cross, to persevere until the end, and then they'll experience salvation. And not a matter of, you know, you're going to save yourself, but Christianity is not a soft thing. It requires a tremendous amount of perseverance, but alongside that receptivity, knowing that we can't do it by ourselves. Even receptivity is not passivity, because receptivity requires a tremendous amount of perseverance in being able to receive love in order to be able to give love. That's the only way we'll be able to love in the first place, is it something that requires receptivity first and then perseverance.
That's Father Tim Grumbach. I'm Tim Murray. You're listening to Trending with Tim Murray. We're talking about how really, even in the example of Motley Crue in this biopic that's on Netflix, how we've seen just the degeneration of men. We are seeing this effeminacy in the culture. Men have become soft. They're strictly pursuing pleasure, versus that's the opposite of perseverance. Perseverance is long suffering, toiling through things. Yet men are forsaking what is good for simple, day-to-day, short-lasting pleasure. How do we regain the sense of perseverance for men?
Well, it's been happening not just since Motley Crue in the 80s, but it's been happening since Adam in the garden, hasn't it? That reaching out for the fruit was seeking an immediate pleasure rather than the tilling and the gardening and the caring for the garden and the pleasure that comes with that.
Right. Or even Adam's responsibility, and like you're saying, to till and protect the garden. Essentially, he was supposed to protect Eve, and here's this great monster. And if you read the story, you can't help but tell Adam's there with Eve, but he didn't want to do what was toilsome and difficult. He chose to kind of just let her lead, let her make the decision, and then blame her later on.
And the serpent's words are so insidious, the way that they turn around God's own commandment, which is, you know, we hear the word commandment, we think restriction, but God's words were not a restriction. They were a giving of freedom to Adam and Eve. And it's so ridiculous to hear, you know, atheists say, oh, well, the serpent was just freeing Adam and Eve from being these robots that God had created. I'm like, you know, give me a break. You don't understand the kind of law that God gives and the freedom that it offers to us. He was saying, you may eat of any of the tree in the garden except for this one. He doesn't give a reason for that. But as soon as the serpent comes in, he says, is it true that God told you you couldn't eat from any of the trees in the garden? And Eve, you know, kind of on her back foot, without Adam speaking up and saying, no, this is the commandment that God gave to me. She says, well, no, God says we just couldn't eat from that one or touch it. And she kind of adds words to God. And so from the very beginning, the serpent's words is the temptation to us to doubt God's trust in us, the freedom that God gives us, and to doubt God's love and his commands. And you know, we look at something like a Motley Crue, so many bands that came through in the 80s, and that whole culture in Hollywood, and you know, the Hollywood Strip, the Sunset Strip, it's a listening to the serpent, doubting God's command of love, doubting, thinking that God has something against us, that he's trying to restrict us. Mm-hmm. And then reaching out for that fruit and saying, I'm going to do it my way.
Mm-hmm. You're listening to Trending with Tim Murray. Shout out to everyone who's listening on the Relevant Radio Network. Hope you're enjoying the show. Head over to radiotrending.com to listen to more episodes and maybe share this specific episode with my guest, Father Tim Grumbach. You know, looking at this, we have to ask the question, perseverance, how do we find it? Clearly, Adam struggled in the garden. He wasn't able to find that balance of persevering. He and Eve began to doubt God and to doubt God's command that called them into authentic freedom. But when they doubted God, they no longer were open and receptive to the graces that only God can pour into our lives so that we're able to persevere, ultimately in the end, to union with Christ.
Right. And so that was the plan from the beginning, wasn't it? This union with Christ. And that was a great argument throughout the history of theology of, you know, would Jesus have come if the sin had not happened? And I'm on the side that says, yes, ultimately God's plan was still to unite us to himself, but by his means. You know, it was God's plan. And we chose, and you know, that story is so safe if we just see it as history, maybe not as literal history, but as something that happened thousands and thousands of years ago. But it becomes a little more dangerous and tells us a lot more about who we are if we see ourselves as Adam and Eve, that every day we're making these decisions. Am I going to follow the law that God has put forth before me? His desire that, you know, he's not my rival. He wants me to share in his life. And I can do that now. I don't have to wait to die and go to heaven before I share in God's life. We have the sacraments. We have the prayer life. We have the body of Christ. We have the community that God wants us to share in his life.
Coming up on Trending, we'll be talking about why, no doubt, Gwen Stefani is delaying her marriage. So that and more coming up on Trending.
Timory will be right back. Tweet them at Timory. That's T-I-M-M-E-R-I-E. You're listening to Trending with Timory, where morality and culture meet, offering an eternal perspective on today's hottest topics.
Father Tim Grumbach here in studio with me. You know, I want to talk, we were talking about how perseverance is the opposite of effeminacy. Maybe you're someone who's like, yeah, I need to be better at pursuing the good. I need to recognize that also, although perseverance is a habit, it's also a gift from God. Well, I'm going to challenge you. Pick one thing this week that you're struggling with. Whether it's your Lenten commitment, whether it's prayer at night, whatever that thing for you might be, and pray. Offer God, offer yourself to God and say, come in, fill this space, help me to persevere in this, and then take habitual actions to make it a habit.
Yeah, the first prayer we've got to make when we're struggling with some kind of commitment we've made is to tell God, okay, I can't do this by myself. I've been hearing it so much lately, this whole, God will never give you more than you can handle. And I just say, that's the opposite of the gospel. God will always give us more than we can handle. And the point is because God will never give us more than he can handle. We see it over and over again in the Gospels. The disciples are thrown into situations that they cannot handle without Jesus. Mm-hmm. And so if you find yourself struggling this Lent with some kind of commitment that you've made, be patient with yourself. Be patient and tell God, I can't do this by myself. This forgiveness I find difficult, God, you're the one that's going to have to do the forgiving. This fast I've committed myself to, God, let me be weak so that you can be strong. You know, our temptation is to treat Lent like it's just a boot camp, just a time to get stronger. I think it's a time to get weaker. And that's when God can begin to pour his grace into our lives. And we understand just how much we need him.
Yeah, we talked about how effeminacy in many ways is men becoming passive, pretending like they're being feminine. But in reality, they're just like there. In reality, the receptivity of women, the openness to God and his will in our lives is what we all need. We need to be open to saying, I am not my own God, and be willing to recognize that.
Yeah, praise that. Praise God for that. You know, there is a God and I am not him.
I look at the story of some of the actresses of the Unplanned movie that I've been interviewing over the last couple of weeks. If you've missed it, please head over to radiotrending.com. We had Ashley Bratcher. We had Robia Scott, who are both the primary actresses of the movie Unplanned, one being the villain and one being Abby Johnson's pro-life story from having performed over 22,000 or participated in oversight of 22,000 abortions. I want to talk here about Gwen Stefani and how she's actually delaying her marriage to Blake Shelton. This is really interesting. I didn't know that Gwen Stefani was Catholic. Did you?
I did, actually. I think I know which parish she goes to, and I think I know the priest there. I don't want to call out any names or anything like that, but I understand that she's there quite often. So,
yes, and I think she's there. I think it might even be the same parish that her parents attend. Cause there have been pictures online. I was curious looking this up and how, you know, she's how embarrassing and awkward she's photoed at Mass, outside of Mass, talking to, oh, and I'm pretty sure those are her parents with her three boys.
Yeah, that's why we don't need to name drop.
yes, absolutely. But Gwen Stefani, civilly married in the past, is now looking at marrying Blake Shelton. As many know, she has three boys with her former husband. She is actually, as they've announced their wedding, they've now announced that they're delaying their marriage because she first is going to go through the process to receive an annulment from the church. So can you talk briefly about what an annulment is?
An annulment is a recognition that a marriage from its very beginning was not a sacramental marriage. And so some people will say it's Catholic divorce. It's not Catholic divorce. A civil divorce is an ending of the bond in a civil matter. While an annulment recognizes that from the very moment that the vows were offered to one another, because the sacrament of marriage is different from the rest of the sacraments. The rest of the sacraments, it would normally be the priest or the deacon who is in the person of Christ, especially the priest, and bestowing this sacrament upon the person receiving the sacrament. But in marriage, it's different, at least in the Roman Catholic, the Western understanding, is that we believe that it is the couple who are bestowing the sacrament upon one another, and the priest or the deacon are standing in as a witness for the church. So that's a beautiful aspect of, this is God pouring his life and his love and his grace into the world through this couple's love, which is meant to be free, total, faithful, and fruitful, just like looking at the cross. But an annulment is actually can be quite a beautiful spiritual process.
Because maybe you or someone you know has had a marriage in the past that truly fell apart by nothing that you could do to bring it back together. Well, the church can go back and look and say, maybe this marriage was never valid because maybe something was preventing you, even in your own attitudes, from coming there freely, mm-hmm. from coming there totally, mm-hmm. from having this intention of faithfulness. And maybe you weren't open to having children, a lack of fruitful. So an act against, an attitude against one of those four things at the moment of those vows from the beginning could have made that marriage invalid. And so that's what Gwen Stefani is going through the process of going, before I get married, because she wants to get married in the church, to my knowledge, to Blake Shelton, she wants to make sure that let's do this right. Let's get married in the church, but I'm not free to marry.
Right. And annulment can actually be a healing process. Because it could be a time for a couple who may really be at odds at that point in their marriage, who wants to see if their marriage was null so that they can maybe just move on with their lives or maybe get married another time. They will have a chance to look back at where did the marriage go wrong? And was there something that some kind of immaturity, some kind of coercion that was happening at the beginning of their marriage that they have left unresolved and unhealed? And you know, while the process of an annulment is not to get the couple back together, there may be some healing that is needed so that they can relate to one another as human beings again. So the healing process is just as important as the legal process of an mm-hmm. annulment. And so that may be something that happens for Gwen during this process. It could be healing between her and her first husband, mm-hmm. But also be something that opens up some important lines of communication between herself and Blake moving forward in their own marriage.
You're listening to Trending with Timmery. That is Father Tim Grumbach. You can review Trending to help other people find it on iTunes and other social media platforms. Head over to radiotrending.com. Click that subscribe page so that you don't miss an episode. But then from there, please leave a 5-star review, of course, to help others find this great Catholic content. Well, I think it's great.
Yeah, it is great.
So I wanted to talk in this perspective, talking about Gwen Stefani. You know, I don't usually like to go like hearsay gossip, but it is rumored that her current fiance, Blake Shelton, has converted to Catholicism over the last year or so. I don't know if that's true or not, but I think it would be pretty neat if it seems like Gwen really is. And again, I know anytime I cover something about a star, Father Tim, someone calls me, I can't believe you talked about them. Don't you know that they do X, Y, and Z? I recognize that. Or actually, maybe I don't really follow or care what the stars do that much. But what we can learn from Gwen, someone who's living in the public life, is that she's someone who is trying to live her faith. Maybe not perfectly, but you and I also aren't doing it perfectly. Maybe she did get her current fiance to convert to Catholicism. Maybe she's trying to do it right. Isn't that a message to us that it is so important that when we're orienting ourselves toward marriage, that it's ultimately about the good of one another and getting each other to heaven and forming those children to the best of your ability to also go to heaven?
Right. It's about forming that domestic church. And the domestic church really, really needs, it really needs both husband and wife, father and mother, to want to be a priestly people within it so that they can bring children into their home, a place where sacrifices are made, where mercy is shown, where forgiveness can be asked for. And like the prodigal son story, that is the gospel coming up for this coming Sunday, is that the children know that if they're not living the way that they know they could be living, that they have a place to come back to without questions being asked, mm-hmm. to be welcomed back home. But then there will be a demand made to love in a way that they are called to love, to the way for which they were made to love. So I find it an interesting point that they note that that Blake may have converted to Catholicism, but is keeping it quiet. He mm-hmm. doesn't, you know, if so, it's clear then he doesn't want it to be about him, and you know, his choices being made in that sense. But I really hope that if he has converted to Catholicism, it's for himself. Mm-hmm. And not Absolutely. Just to make this process easier, because that's a part of the marriage preparation process as well, that a special dispensation is required if one partner is Catholic and the other is not. Mm-hmm. And especially if that other person is not even a baptized Christian, there's, you know, it's a lot of paperwork for the priest, but it's more importantly, there are some important conversations that need to be had as for the Catholic party. Will they be tempted to leave the faith? There's an expectation of the church that the children will be raised in the Catholic faith, that their home will be a domestic church. We expect that. We desire that. But these are conversations that come up in marriage preparation, which we can't even begin to imagine or to make up what kind of conversations have already been had between Blake and Gwen and their priest who's preparing them.
A neat thing that we saw in an interview from Mary Claire magazine when Gwen was on the cover, I believe, is she ended up opening up talking about faith, and she talked about the importance of prayer for her each day. She said, you know, other people do different types of self-improvement, self-meditation, you know, kind of, but I talk to God and my faith matters. And she talks about how important gratitude is, but also she talked about how, you know, how great is it that I'm not God, and she's open to gratitude. She's like, I need to be open. We need to be open. That's so important. And we need to be open to guidance is what she talked about. And I think that that's a very humbling and beautiful moment. And I think that we see this, although she, you know, we don't know all of what's going on in this journey for her. What I do see is that her faith matters to her, and she's choosing to delay her marriage even when other people don't get why you would need to go through an annulment.
Yeah, so this is a really important moment for us to take and to pray for Gwen and Blake, but also for any couple preparing for marriage, especially those who are entering into a situation where one is Catholic and one is not. And you know, an important part of that marriage preparation is, how do you pray together? You know, and especially if one person is an atheist, the important question will have to be asked, so you two disagree on the most important question to life. This is an important conversation to have. And they may say, oh, I don't think that's that important a question. Like, well, it is.
Yeah.
And so these are important conversations to have. And so just take a moment to pray for couples who are preparing for marriage to have these difficult and important conversations so that their house can truly become a domestic church, a place where young hearts are prepared for forgiveness, mercy, and prayer.
And why wouldn't we discern that most important question of human life, of whether or not your future spouse is on the same page? We'll be right back talking about why young men are giving up on marriage.
Timory will be right back. Tweet them at Timory. That's T-I-M-M-E-R-I-E. You're listening to Trending with Timory.
So good to be back with you. I have in studio with me Father Tim Grumbach. I wanted to do a shout out to everyone. I'll be actually giving a parish mission at St. Andrew's Newman Center in Riverside coming up here in Southern California just a couple weeks. So please check out. You can find out more April 8th, 9th, and 10th down at St. Andrew's Newman Center. I'll be sure to put links on my website here soon as well. But we're going to be talking about some of the key characters of the gospel. St. Peter, St. Mary Magdalene, and St. John, and really get to know them a little more personally. Also coming up this summer is the Vox Vitae Institute. Three nights, Father Frank Pavone, Matt Walsh, Dr. Jory Nadal, Pam Stenzel, and many others for evening speaker series. Come after work. But also there's a pro-life training camp for youngsters. Check that out at voxvitae.org. Father Tim, it's an interesting trend happening right now. Someone told me, I think I mentioned this to you a couple months ago on Facebook, that, well, really, millennials, people today recognize that human beings have evolved. They no longer need marriage. Mm. But the reality is that statistics are showing that young men aren't saying they don't need marriage. Young men, specifically in the 18 to 34-year-old range, are actually giving up on marriage.
Yeah, it's a fearful thing. It seems to be a lack of what we were talking about earlier is this perseverance. And looking at marriage, it's faith, it's free, total, faithful, fruitful, right? It's faithful. It's something that's supposed to last for one's whole life. And we get so caught up in our minds as men thinking, oh my gosh, that's a long time. You know, and you know, part of our masculinity is about making commitments and being able to follow through with that. And so it's really destructive to our masculinity, this trend of looking at marriage as something we don't want to commit to.
You know, we're at a historic point, even just over the last 20, 30 years. It used to be that if we look back to about 1997, women age 18 to 34, 28% of them thought a successful marriage was one of the most important things. Well, that number has actually risen over the last 22 years. Pew Research did a study showing that today it's gone from 28 to 37% of young women now believe that marriage is one of the most important things. So we've seen that rise almost 10%. However, the opposite's happened with men. It's gone down over the last 20 years by 10% almost with men. Fewer men believe that marriage is one of the most important things. it's so surprising to see that like men are just giving up on marriage.
And one of the constant teachings of the church is that the marriage and the family is the most basic cell of society.
Yeah.
And for men to say, or men or women to say, we don't need marriage, but for men to be giving up on marriage in this way, is it's an individualistic sort of thing, you know, because sometimes marriage is understood as like, oh, that's for me. Mm-hmm. You know, it's for the spouses and just for the spouses. And so it's growing in such an individualistic sense that we have lost the sense that marriage is not just for the good of the spouses. It's for the good of society as well. And that's one of the reasons why in the Catholic Church, we have our tradition that marriage between Catholics must happen, except in the case of the danger of death, must happen within a church, because it is signifying something greater than the couple themselves, that they are saying yes to one another, giving themselves to one another as a gift in the midst of the community. Mm-hmm. And so this trend of men giving up on marriage points to me to the growing individualistic and isolating, you know, effects of, well, our sinful culture.
I don't need the authority of the church to make it so that I can be married. I don't need the authority. And that's part of it, is also that the church is on sacred ground where the authority of God stands.
Right.
And so God's authority is reigning. So people are saying, no, thank you. But one of the comments that's interesting, some women are saying women aren't women anymore. Mm. And it's sad to hear the young men say this. And I would actually agree. So many women are so competitive, so aggressive. And even if they don't realize it or mean to, I see even in my own attitude sometimes, you know, just the world that we are growing up in, we've created these characteristics and attitudes in ourselves that are so cultural in many ways, or based on, you know, life experiences and getting ahead. Even just like this college scandal that came out, you know, everyone believes they have to go to college. Well, so many women have bought the lie. Well, you have to go to college, get that career, not have children, and be on birth control for 20 or 30 years. And women aren't women.
Yeah. And then it becomes too late to start having children. And this is something that's rising more and more in our culture. And I think the conversation needs to be had again of the concept of having, you know, mothers stay at home with their children. Yeah. And a family setting itself up around a single income where the father can be provider and protector. And, you know, one may object to this. Oh, you're being sexist, Father Tim. I'm like, well, the more I look at this and the more I see the results of this, and I'm not saying that women who are in work right now, you know, should immediately leave their jobs and whatnot. But I think we need to begin to have that conversation again of what are the benefits of having a mother at home with her children and not shaping the world around these new expectations, but shaping our families and our lives around this hope that the home can be a family church, that the home could be a domestic church. I think we need to start looking again at ourselves and how we can shape our lives rather than just expecting the world to shape around our desires.
You're listening to Trending with Tim Rhee. That's Father Tim Grumbach. And I have to say, I really do agree with you. And I know a lot of people are going to be offended. So if you're living a contrary lifestyle, don't be offended. You know, we talk about women being in the home, being housewives or caring for their children, that itself takes every ounce of commitment. And so many women today are struggling because they're having to outsource their parenting. And, you know, many people feel guilty or inconsistent or feel incapable. And I think especially to the older generations, my message is to really help young people know, you can be a good mom. You can be a great mom. I'm so proud of you. I think that there's a lot of insecurity among women about their motherhood today, or you're going to be a great mom when you have children. You know, hearing that, I think many women need to hear this. But the reality is the church, for especially the last like 100 years, has re-emphasized the importance of women, the heart being within the home. And right now we have the heart so conflicted. So many women care about so many different things. I mean, that's a part of being feminine, is this compassion and empathy. But we're taking all of that empathy outside of the home. And, you know, even just my story, it's interesting, you know, being married a month and a half, the challenge is just already to balance what is necessary for just my spouse and I at the same time as having a work environment right now that's been very demanding and has kept me out of the home when it shouldn't have necessarily.
Right. That image of the wife being a fruitful vine in the heart of the house comes from Psalm 128. And Pope Francis actually reflects on it in Amoris Laetitia, the much debated and sometimes argued apostolic exhortation.
And there's some great elements, though, in
So there is a beautiful reflection on that that I've actually pointed married couples preparing for marriage to read that reflection and to see what is said about married life in the home and the raising of children as a domestic church, but also to see the ways that there are greater and greater expectations being placed on women. And the need for that conversation to be had within the married couple, a discernment that happens with them to see what kind of changes can be made in their life in order to make sure that the mother can be at home.
To bring the wife, the mm-hmm. mother, into the heart of the home to help guide with love what is taking place in the home. I think it is so important, so fundamental, and it is a sacrifice. Mm-hmm. It absolutely is a sacrifice. You know, I think my journey over the last, 8 years or so, finishing undergrad, coming out of grad school, is I've made sacrifices in order to do ministry work. Mm-hmm. And so that was forsaking a large amount of my salary, even to this day, in volunteering. It's not something I share, but I actually don't get paid for what I do on the radio show. And I'll tell you, it takes about 30 hours of my week almost. And it's a choice to give that time to volunteer. Well, it's a choice to give your time into your home and forsake other things, forsake the luxuries of materialism sometimes.
Yes, and sometimes a wife and a mother will say something, trying to lift up and encourage her role as a mother in a home and say, well, my job is to be a stay-at-home mom. And I've heard it said, no, it's so much more than a job.
Forming souls.
Yeah, right. Society has convinced you that what you're doing is like a job, but what you're doing is a vocation.
Even the simplicity of forming good manners in children. So many young people have terrible manners anymore. And, forming young people to be hospitable, to be good conversationalists. I look at, even 4, 5, and 6-year-olds anymore that are so terribly behaved. And the reality is that if the parent was there guiding their soul, guiding the wildness that there is in their heart, they could really work to shape a character that could be so profoundly good that challenges other people.
Yes, and God bless those who take care of other people's children.
Yes.
teachers and nannies and housekeepers and everyone who is able to be there and to offer their gifts for that. But let's be honest, there is nobody who can fully take the role of a mother for her own children.
Yeah, absolutely. And the irony is we're sitting here talking about how young men have given up on marriage, but I think this really is at the heart of it. Women are not women today anymore. And this is what young men are saying. And I'll even see as simple as so many women are embarrassed to, for example, wear the color pink, to like, more feminine colors. They're embarrassed. They don't like wearing dresses. I remember I was in a business meeting one time with someone who was wearing a pantsuit, and she was talking to her colleague saying, yeah, if I were to wear a dress, I would be looked down upon and I wouldn't be taken seriously and so forth. And the reality is that if a man does that, there's something wrong with him. I think most men have a respect for women as women. When you're living yourself to the fullest potential, you don't have to wear pants. You don't have to wear a dress. Be you.
And it will challenge a man to understand his own masculinity, to see a woman who is, dare I use the word, modest. I know that word carries such terrible connotations in the purity culture and whatnot, but a woman who is able to express her beauty in a way that God has designed for her to, this will call a man to his masculinity in ways that we have forgotten and tried to ignore, wrapping this back up to look at Motley Crue. They are not seeing women as that beautiful creation that they are, and so they're unable to see themselves as the men they were created to be.
This has been Trending with Timmery. To book her to speak or learn more about her guest, visit radiotrending.com. That's radiotrending.com. You can listen to more of Trending via the podcast on iTunes, Google Play, or the iHeartRadio app, where you can share your favorite episodes.